A company says using drilling waste to build an airplane runway is perfectly safe, but not everyone's so sure.
This product has not yet been given an 100% okay, and until it does, then I'm not going to be in favor of it.
I'm Kara Holsapple. Coming up on the Allegheny front, struggles over fracking regulations continue. The deregulation of Pennsylvania's electricity suppliers leaves some customers in the dark about which to choose. Plus, a songbird that might have you doing a double take. That and more are on the way on the Allegheny front. Stay with us. Last summer, toxic algae on Lake Erie shut down the city of Toledo's water supply. Could this summer be even worse? Maybe. That's according to a new prediction by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Independent producer Karen Schaefer reports.
The updated forecast for this year's algae bloom in western Lake Erie is grim. NOAA scientist Rick Stumpf says the bloom will undoubtedly be worse than last year.
We are looking at more severe than 2014, not as bad as 2011, but potentially this could be the second worst bloom that we have seen on Lake Erie.
In 2011, Lake Erie's worst ever toxic bloom drifted far east of Cleveland. Last year, the city of Toledo had to shut down its water supply for nearly 3 days. Stump says it was this year's record June rainfall that tipped the scales, washing phosphorus that feeds the algae from farmland into the lake. But Stump believes most water treatment plants should be able to overcome the blooms. And biweekly NOAA bulletins on algae blooms will help boaters, fishermen, and vacationers know which areas to avoid. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Karen Schaefer.
Parents in the Mars Area School District in Butler County turned out for a protest this week against fracking near their schools. It's an ongoing issue that's beginning to get statewide attention in Pennsylvania. The Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier was there.
Bearing signs and bullhorns, more than 50 people showed up in front of Mars Area High School. They were there to protest a plan by Rex Energy to drill at a site about a half mile from the high school. Nicole Mazarek said she was worried for the safety of her 3 school-aged children.
I'm worried about an explosion and what they're going to do with 3,500 kids. Where are they going to put them? Where are they going to take them?
The issue is getting a lot of attention in Butler County, just north of Pittsburgh. One drilling rig sits just 500 feet from the playground of an elementary school. State regulators have taken notice. The Department of Environmental Protection has proposed increasing restrictions on drilling near schools. Though environmental groups say the setback the DEP is proposing, 200 feet from schools or playgrounds, is too short. Raina Ripple of the Southwest Pennsylvania Environmental Health Project says even a half mile from the school is too short a distance. She recommends a mile.
1 mile radius is safer. So there is more safety involved if you place this type of drilling activity no closer than a mile. Anything closer than a mile, the health risks definitely go up, the exposures go up, and the chance for an accident are that much greater.
Parent opposition has stalled Rex Energy's plans to drill near Mars Area High School. A judge is reviewing the case and has ordered work stopped until September. A Rex spokesman declined to comment, citing pending litigation. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Tons of drill cuttings end up in Pennsylvania landfills each year. These cuttings are the waste dirt and rock that comes up from drilling gas wells in the Marcellus Shale. They contain naturally occurring radiation, heavy metals, and industrial chemicals. But one company has found a way to keep these cuttings out of a landfill. As State Impact Pennsylvania's Marie Cusick reports, critics say the method is also a way to avoid regulations.
As the manager of the Wellsboro-Johnston Airport, Craig Musser has a plan to try to get more air traffic to this rural patch of north central Pennsylvania. but a lot of people really don't like the idea. He hops in his car and drives to the edge of the runway to show me.
If I didn't feel it was safe, I wouldn't want to do it either.
So what's all the fuss about? Well, a Montgomery County-based waste disposal company called Clean Earth is proposing to haul in nearly 500,000 tons of gas industry waste, specifically processed drill cuttings, in order to extend the runway out by 600 feet. Musser thinks it will help the airport and, in turn, the local economy.
To bring growth, you know, an airport is a vital step towards that.
The plan has been met with major pushback here in Tioga County, one of the most drilled-on places in the state. That's because the airport sits high atop one of the region's most beautiful natural assets and a major tourist destination, the Pine Creek Gorge. It's often called the Grand Canyon of Pennsylvania. The airport's runway is next to a steep embankment that's only 0.5 mile from a tributary to the gorge. And that embankment is exactly where Clean Earth wants to put the drill cuttings. Tioga County Commissioner Eric Coolidge is a Republican who says drillers have been a godsend to the area. But he and many other gas industry supporters, including State Senate Pro Tem Joe Scarnati, are not sold on the plan.
My concerns are that this product has not yet been given an 100% okay, and until it does, then I'm not going to be in favor of it.
Not far from the airport, the visitor center at the Leonard Harrison State Park plays a video showing the gorge and all the efforts over the years to keep it in a pristine state. Ed Osgood thinks it would be a big mistake to put so much drilling waste next to the gorge.
We have no long-term peer-reviewed studies to indicate that this material is safe.
He's a member of the Pine Creek Headwaters Protection Group, and he's worried that when it rains, the drilling waste could run into the gorge.
By the way, I think the name Clean Earth is somewhat ironic. This is anything but Clean Earth.
Thanks to an exemption in federal law, none of the waste generated by the oil and gas industry is considered hazardous, no matter what's in it. Clean Earth declined multiple interview requests, but says it's been handling the waste with, quote, the highest integrity. They've already disposed of more than 172,000 tons of it in recent years, thanks to a special permit from the State Department of Environmental Protection. The company got it to do research and development to study the beneficial reuse of drill cuttings. In other words, they want to do something with it rather than send it off to a landfill. Steve Sokash has been in charge of reviewing the permit for DEP.
We're still evaluating the information at the current time. You know, we haven't completed our review of Clean Earth's conclusions.
Over the past 3 years, Clean Earth has been putting drill cuttings onto polluted industrial sites around the state, known as brownfields. And this has really rubbed some people in the waste business the wrong way. In 2013, the Pennsylvania Waste Industries Association, which is a trade group representing landfill owners, sent a letter to DEP urging it to deny a renewal of Clean Earth's permit. They argued it's not really a small-time research operation. Instead, it's a full-scale commercial enterprise designed to avoid regulations. The DEP ended up renewing the permit, which remained valid until 2017. Although the agency is still studying the practice, Sokash doesn't think people should be alarmed by the idea of recycling drill cuttings.
DEP believes that evaluating drill cuttings to determine if they can be beneficially used for a number of uses in Pennsylvania is a good idea.
Earlier this year, the DEP issued a study which found the natural radiation from drill cuttings posed little threat to public health. It said that disposal techniques in landfills were safe, but it didn't look at the kind of work Clean Earth is doing, whether or not it's safe to reuse the waste. Back in Tioga County, the Pine Creek Headwaters Protection Group has been meeting regularly to investigate the airport project.
The building that they're building to be their headquarters in north central Pennsylvania.
Group member Bryn Hammerstrom has been upset by the surge in gas drilling in his backyard in recent years, but he thinks this project simply goes too far.
We can't stop hydraulic fracturing, but we can at least try and make the disposal of the byproducts of hydraulic fracturing done as safely to the environment and to the population of Tioga County as possible.
The DEP says it doesn't know when it will make a decision about the project. Marie Cusick, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Sure, you've heard of Rockin' Robin, but another little bird is a one-man band.
It may sound like the bird is producing two notes at the same time. The veery, in effect, sings a duet with itself.
The a cappella artist of the woods. That's on an all-new Bird Files. Stay tuned. Me, 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 me. Better living through chemistry. It was a famous slogan of the 1950s and 60s, and it's used in a sort of advertising jingle for a chemical pesticide in a new opera based on the life and work of environmentalist and scientist Rachel Carson. The opera is premiering this month in Pittsburgh, Carson's hometown. Opera Theater of Pittsburgh, which commissioned the work, is calling it the world's first eco-opera. Carson's 1962 book, Silent Spring, is an inspiration for the piece. The book raised the alarm about the indiscriminate use of the chemical pesticide DDT and its impact on ecosystems and health. Tammy Ryan, who wrote the libretto, and composer Gilda Lyons are here to talk with me about the opera, which is called A New Kind of Fallout. Thanks so much for speaking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Tammy, briefly, what's the story or the plot of the opera?
Alice Front, who is our main character, she's newly married and newly pregnant, and she reads the first article that was serialized of Silent Spring in 1962. And this begins sort of a journey for her where she's concerned about, you know, the health of her baby because she's reading about how DDT was sifting, drifting through the environment and harming baby chicks in the shells. So the robins were dying because they weren't reproducing. And she brings this up to her husband, who is an ad executive for a chemical company, Better Life Chemical, who is responsible for sort of leading the backlash against Rachel Carson, because that's what happened when Silent Spring first came out. The chemical companies kind of rose up and tried to discredit her and her work. So that's the basic conflict.
Tell me where the name comes from.
That is directly taken from Silent Spring. She calls it a new kind of fallout. The effects of the pesticides, the use of the word fallout, there's no question that she's trying to conjure the imagery of the atomic bomb. The intention was to shock people into hearing what she had to say.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that the main character is, in the beginning of the opera, finds out that she's expecting, or she tells her husband that she's expecting. And it made me think about some of the themes in Rachel Carson's Silent Spring that especially lend themselves well to dramatization, sort of unpacking the science, tell the story through characters and music. For example, she's talking about the effects of DDT on eggs, the bird's eggs, and she says the shells, you know, become too fragile and they crack before the egg is hatched. And then she says at some point, or she sings, you know, there's nature stirring inside of me. Can you talk a little bit about how you use music to tell that part of the story?
Throughout the opera, there's a recurring musical idea of poison, the musicalization. The musicalization of poison is this running 16th note gesture, and we have older Alice, who is looking back and remembering all of the things that we see younger Alice living. She's dying of cancer, and so as in the prologue, as she's receiving the injection, the chemotherapy treatment, as that begins, we hear the poison motive, because that's what chemo is. It's a poison that's meant to kill the bad thing inside of you. And Alice, when she starts to go to that place where she's really internalizing the potential hazards of this poison around her, that musical idea comes back. She's, as a character, for me, very rich because she's strong, but she's also vulnerable.
is creating an environmentally themed opera different from other stories that you've told on stage?
It's been very important to both of us to not write a story that was about preaching. We've kept this story rooted in a human story. But it's not a simple story. DDT was used in an important way, and it did save lives. And Jack Front says that to Alice.
He's her husband.
Yes. And he says, Alice, there must be some good here. In all of this work that we've done, please tell me there's some good. And that's, to me, don't tell young Alice, but that's some of the most beautiful music for me is his. Yeah. He's so pained. He wants this all to be okay. And there is, I mean, I have two small children myself. I want it all to be okay. Mm-hmm. We still eat organic food when we can because there's a fear, but we can't know. And this was 1962. They didn't have all the information then. Mm-hmm. I wanted this to be a messy story. Mm-hmm. I didn't want us to end with it all figured out.
Absolutely. And I often write about, you know, sometimes larger subjects through the lens of family, relationships, marriage, and the changing of relationships. Like 1962, at that time was such a, we were about to like just make a big right turn here in 1963, where everything was going to begin to change. There was the women's rights, civil rights movement, and the beginning of the environmental movement, right? So everything was sort of happening at the same time. So I thought about that a lot too.
The play is set in the 1960s and then fast forwards to a more present time when the main character is elderly and dying of cancer, presumably from being exposed to DDT, which happens later in the, I don't want to give the whole story away, but it happens later in the story. Of course, DDT has been banned in the U.S. except for under very limited circumstances, but it's used in the developing world. What's the message for today's audience? Is it a history lesson or is there relevance for what's happening in the environment today?
Oh, boy. Oh, I think it's totally relevant. It's not about DDT. For me, DDT is just, that was the chemical they were using, and that's the one she focused on. It's about the poison soup that we kind of are living in. It's like we're in a snow globe full of everything in this, in the ecosystem, right? Ecology was a word she was one of the first to use. It's all in there. And we're swimming in it, we're breathing it in, we're eating it, and I think we're reaching a tipping point. You know, more and more people are getting cancer, it seems to me, and other illnesses that are all related to what's going on in the environment. And one of the saddest things for me is, one of the things that Rachel Carson was the most afraid of or most worried about was what was happening to the oceans. You know, she said, we don't want to acidify the oceans. And actually, that's what's happening now. And you know, connected to climate change, she talked about that too. So it's in her book starts with the first opening lines of the chapters. It's a fable for tomorrow. And tomorrow is now. And it's not a fable, as we say in the opera. It's not a fairy tale. It's a message for us now. So I think it's really relevant.
Thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
I've been speaking with librettist Tammy Ryan and composer Gilda Lyons about their new opera, A New Kind of Fallout, based on the life and work of Rachel Carson. For more on the production by Opera Theater of Pittsburgh, visit our website, alleghenyfront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Carol Holsoppel. And here's another little sneak peek at the opera sung by the character Alice.
My promise, my silver glittering hope for tomorrow.
You may have noticed a new voice on the Allegheny Front over the last few weeks. Lou Bluen joined our staff from Michigan back in May. And after living in a sublet for his first few months here in Pittsburgh, he got his own apartment. Other than rent, he's only got one monthly bill, the electric. But he found out that choosing an electric provider in Pennsylvania isn't as simple as it was back in Michigan. Here's the Allegheny Front's Lou Bluen.
The idea that I would have a choice of companies never even occurred to me. Back home in Michigan, a single utility has a monopoly over your whole area, and you're stuck with them. Here in Pennsylvania, though, it's a whole different ballgame.
And this is what's interesting about the electric industry. There are no national rules or policies, so it really varies state by state.
That's Greg Reed. He's the director of the Center for Energy at the University of Pittsburgh. And he offered to help me navigate the process of choosing an electric supplier.
Okay, so we put in your zip code, and here come my results.
So now Greg's putting my info into a website called papowerswitch.org.
It's put together by the Public Utility Commission of Pennsylvania, a nice service that they offer.
And it basically looks like healthcare.gov, but instead of comparing different health insurance plans, we're looking at competing electricity providers.
Your distributor is Duquesne Light.
Okay.
And right now, the price per kilowatt hour, if you decided to just go with them, is 7.98 cents.
So that's sort of like the default plan, the one you get automatically if you don't shop around. And it's a good rate. But get this, there are 79 other energy plans I can currently choose from. But just how did Pennsylvania end up with so many choices while Michigan has like one? Well, Greg says it has to do with a word that I thought would never have any bearing on my life in any way. Deregulation.
You know, you look at the history of the industry and it dates back to the early 1900s. And, you know, for 90 or so years, it was a very monopolistic enterprise.
So basically, one local utility would own all the wires needed to get electricity to your house and own the power plants that made the electricity. But
a lot of consumers and consumer advocacy groups and utility commissions, you know, thought that, you know, maybe it was too monopolistic and they wanted to open it up to competition in the mid-90s. Essentially, what happened there was really generation assets were decoupled from transmission and distribution assets.
In other words, local utilities would still own the wires, but other companies could actually make your power. And that led to an explosion of new power companies on the generation side in the 1990s. Hence the 79 choices I now have at papowerswitch.org. But getting back to the business of actually choosing one, well, I did what most people would do when faced with a huge pile of consumer research that they didn't really want to do. I asked a friend what he does.
All right, so here's the most recent bill. So this is the bill that was $59.77.
That's my neighbor, Bill O'Driscoll. He did a bunch of research into all this a few years ago when he chose a renewable electricity supplier, which was something I was interested in.
Well, it was a lot easier then because there were fewer suppliers of renewable energy. There was maybe only 11 at the time that you could choose. And I went at that time with, I think it was called Tri-Eagle.
That's a company out of Texas. But a few years into deregulation, when there were even more choices, Bill shopped around again. Now he's with a company that gets its wind power from Pennsylvania. And the rate is pretty good, about 10 cents a kilowatt hour. But you gotta wonder, if you choose one of these renewable providers, which might be all the way in Texas, are they actually sending the electrons they're making for me all the way through the grid to my apartment in Pittsburgh? Greg Reed says it doesn't really work that way.
Generation from all over the country, frankly, is created and injected into the transmission system. Once it's in the transmission system, the laws of electrical physics take over and those electrons go, you know, where they need to go by the path of least resistance. But we really can't say that an electron made at a wind farm in eastern Pennsylvania or even in Texas, for example, really ends up in our home. There's absolutely no way to track that.
So what you're buying, Greg says, is really more of a virtual product. It's an assurance that somewhere more renewable energy is coming onto the grid because of your personal demand for it. And the wave of consumers making choices like these is big enough now that it's actually starting to impact the grid. For me, I'll definitely be part of that wave, but I've still got a little research to do. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Lou Bluin.
What do yellow jackets, hummingbirds, and foamy purple waves have in common? People have been posting about all of them and more at icchange.org. It's a crowdsourced almanac where anyone can ask questions or make comments about what they're seeing outside. Then we get to work, looking for experts to help tell your stories about climate and weather. So go to iseechange.org, log in, and get the ball rolling. You can even post photos and video. For the first time, I saw some purple chicory flowers. They were blooming in an abandoned lot on my street. So maybe I'll just, yeah, I'll see you at iseechange.org.
I can't look at the rocket launch, the trophy wives of the astronauts, and I won't listen to their words, 'cause I like birds.
And now a story from the Bird Files. There are 4 spot-breasted thrushes that breed in Pennsylvania. The veery is the second most common after the wood thrush. Bob Mulvihill of the National Aviary tells us more about this inconspicuous bird with a very interesting voice.
Veeries live in the dense understory of moist, mixed deciduous forests. They have a russet-colored back and faint spotting on their throat and upper chest. They may look rather plain, but their voices are anything but ordinary. Their complex song, a haunting series of liquid notes that spiral down the musical scale, is often considered one of the loveliest in the northern forests of Pennsylvania. If you listen carefully, it may sound like the bird is producing 2 notes at the same time, and it is. The veery, in effect, sings a duet with itself. The 2-part song is a product of air flowing from its lungs through a divided syrinx or voice box. The bird controls each part separately with multiple pairs of internal and external muscles. Listen again to the veery's beautiful harmonizing. Wildlife artist John James Audubon said that the veery's song, quote, is composed of continuous trills repeated with different variations, enunciated with great delicacy and mellowness. If you want to hear the veery's delicate tune, your best chance is in the morning or early evening in the northern forests of the state. You can even find veeries near Pittsburgh at Lynn Run State Park on the western slopes of Laurel Mountain. Take a drive there on a summer Sunday with your windows rolled down, and you might hear the veery's distinctive song and understand what Audubon meant when he said, quote, it is extremely pleasing to one listening to them in the dark solitudes where this sylvan songster resides. For the Allegheny Front's Bird Files, I'm Bob Mulvihill.
The bird calls for that segment come to us courtesy of the Macaulay Library at the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. If you want to keep up with the birds that are living in and traveling through our region, follow Bird Files on Twitter, at AFBirds. Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer. I'm Carol Holsapple. And if you haven't already, sign up for our weekly newsletter. It comes out even before the show airs. You can do that at our website, AlleghenyFront.org. And join us again next time for more environmental news around your home on the Allegheny Front.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, and the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds. The Richard King Mellon Foundation supports coverage of energy and conservation. Reporting by State Impact Pennsylvania is a collaboration between public radio stations WITF in Harrisburg and WHYY in Philadelphia, covering the Commonwealth's energy economy.